So, Berto, I watched a documentary about lying, and they presented a lot of research, psychological research about lying, a lot of facts about lying, which seems like an oxymoron. And I thought I would talk with you about the documentary and about all the research I looked up, and we could discuss lying. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist, and I'm also a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I make a triangular ice cube.
So I acquired the following facts. This isn't the documentary, but from the internet, various different websites, brandongale.com, littlethings.com, and other places. Tougher bluff, Berto. Americans lie 11 times a week. Tougher bluff.
11 times a week. Well, if we are talking about all sorts of little white lies included, then I'm going to go tough.
Yeah, it is tough. What do you suppose they are measuring as an incident of a lie exactly? You know what I mean?
I mean, to be completely literal, it would be any time that they make a statement non-ironically that is factually not true.
Right.
Right? But in practice, that's kind of odd because it's like there's so many relative things like, oh, did you park close? Yeah. But you might disagree. But, you know, like, I'm not lying. I'm just kind of fudging the facts, but it's not a big deal.
Right. Is lying, I'm obviously telling your spouse that you didn't cheat on them when you did cheat
right,
on them.
That's clear.
That's a lie. But I'm guessing that's not the majority of these 11 times a week. Is lying like when someone asks you, so did you tip them well? And you're like, yeah, I tipped them pretty well, even though you kind of know, I only tipped them 10%. Right. Is that what we're talking about? I imagine that's the majority of these lies. It's like seemingly smaller, inconsequential lying or lying on an exam, or your boss says, so did you show up on time today? And you're like, yeah. Even though you're 5 minutes late or something. Or you tell your boss, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't turn that in. I was real sick last night, even though you went out with your friends instead. You know, I'm guessing those are the on.
Yeah, I will go with that.
Tougher is that. Oh, by the way, everyone out there in podcast land, Berto is actually in the studio with me right now. We are podcasting in person.
This is crazy.
We're so close we can touch fingers.
Touch fingers.
We just touched one finger.
Reach out, touch fingers.
Berto got his second vaccine a little bit ago, and so we are raring to go, spitting in each other's faces like the old days.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How do you feel?
On the one hand, as I said when I walked in, part of it doesn't feel that long. I mean, other than your place got rearranged pretty significantly. But I guarantee if you hadn't rearranged it, it would have felt to me like I was here a few weeks ago. But at the same time, it's like a year and a half, so it feels crazy.
Yeah, a lot of elements are like that for me. I, you know, you and I were very careful during the pandemic. And
very careful.
The whole time, we're just so desperate for a return to normal life. And we're fantasizing about, oh, it's going to feel so awesome when we do these things. And then we do them and it does feel awesome. But then it doesn't feel as novel to me as I thought it would feel. Mm. You know, like the first time I went to a grocery store, it felt novel for sure. But at the same time, I thought, well, I'm not like rolling on the ground in ecstasy, you know?
Right.
It's just kind of interesting, I suppose.
Right. It's a measured thing.
Yeah. Which makes me worried that in 4 years, our entire society will have forgotten all of this and we'll just go right back to our own lackadaisical ways.
It could be.
Tougher bluff, Berto. When people lie, they look up to the right. When people lie, they look up and to the right. Tougher bluff.
I'm looking up and to the right. I actually don't believe that's a universal. So maybe there are some tells that people have, but I wouldn't imagine it's always the same. So I'm going to go bluff.
Yeah, it's bluff. There's a ton of pseudoscience about body language and lying on the internet. So don't believe the hype. all that eye movement, body language crap that you see on YouTube. Total pseudoscience, meaning that they talk about it as if it's scientific, but there's no empirical evidence of their claims. It certainly would be wonderful if we could detect lies by measuring people's body language. We could figure out if a criminal was telling the truth or not, but alas, we do not have that ability. Tougher bluff, Berto. People are better at detecting lies if the liar is wearing a face veil. So
a
like
face
like
veil.
Like a ninja.
Ooh.
You know? Yeah.
Wait, they're better at detecting the lies if they're wearing a face veil?
If the target is saying the lies.
Oh, no, you would imagine that it'd be the opposite. Oh, wait a minute, though. Maybe it's more in the voice than the face. Oh, it's such a tough one. Let me think. And no, I don't mean tough. I haven't answered. Wait. Okay. I'm going to go bluff because I believe maybe you get subtle cues from the face.
It is tough. Eyes reveal more about lying than the rest of the face. So.
Oh, does the face veil not cover the eyes?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. Well, I said like a ninja.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, now I see. Yeah. So the eyes need to be visible, but the rest of the face might distract you.
Right. I think that's the suggestion is that when you aren't distracted by the rest of the face, you're a little bit better at detecting lies.
That's fascinating.
Do people lie more in writing or in speaking?
Oh, I'm going to go in speaking because when you're talking, like, you know, it's a lot more free form. I'd be like, oh, I bench press, I don't know, 250, 270, who knows? But in writing, it feels more official, like it's going to be preserved.
Right. That's what I thought too. But nope, it's actually people lie really? More in writing. Yeah.
Wow. Because they have more time to construct just the right lies.
Well, I don't know. The speculation that I would have is that there's more distance between you and the target of the lie. You are less likely to feel empathy for that individual, you know? Tougher bluff. Do we distrust bearded men more?
Oh, I would say no. I would say beards might make people feel like okay, they're ancient, they're more grizzled, they've been around more. So I'm gonna trust them more. So I'm gonna go bluff. You trust them more with beards?
No. Wait. So you're saying people with beards
are trusted more.
Yes, it's true. We trust men with beards more.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm guessing, a sign of the times as well.
And it's counterintuitive at first because you're like, oh, no, who's this scruffy-looking nerf herder?
Right.
But it turns out that you're like, oh, they don't have time to shave. They're trustworthy.
Right. Tougher bluff. Liars talk more when they are lying. Liars talk more words when they are lying.
I would say tough for inexperienced liars. I think inexperienced liars get nervous and will start just adding extra words.
Well, maybe for some, but average-wise, it is bluff.
Okay.
Liars use fewer, more tentative words, presumably because it takes more brain power to lie.
Oh, interesting.
It's actually one of the hallmarks of lying is, you know, you go to a 7-year-old and you're like, so, I came around the corner and the cookie jar had broken on the floor. What exactly happened? And the lying kid will say, I don't know.
I see.
I wasn't there. Whereas the kid telling the truth was, I don't know.
I was running through the hallway. I was like the dog and I just.
Yeah. And then I heard this crash and I came around the corner and there it was. And I don't know what happened. Maybe it was a dog, you know.
Yeah.
When you're telling the truth, you can speak freely from your instinct, you know, like you don't have to edit every single word that comes out of your face.
This is why I'm a terrible liar. Cause it's like, did you file the taxes? Yeah, basically. I mean, I did the forms and I went online. I did the thing. I talked to someone on the phone while I was. I mean, you know, basically, did you fuck? No.
Tougher bluff. Your lies are more easily detected when you're lying to someone you're attracted to.
Oh, well, I would imagine if you're attracted to someone, you get more nervous, and so then you pronunciate more of your words.
So tougher bluff.
Tough.
Correct. Perhaps for that reason. Tougher bluff, Berto. The average person can detect 60% of lies.
60%? Wow.
Meaning that in experiments, you will have a subject saying something, and then the participant has to say A or B. Truth or lie. And a coin flip would be 50%, right?
But you're saying more often than not, they can detect a lie.
Yeah. A little bit more than a coin flip.
I would have said tough. Prior to the last few years, I'm going to go bluff.
Yeah, it's bluff. Basically, we are no better than a coin flip. Okay. Maybe a little better than it, like slightly, possibly. But humans are incredibly poor at detecting lies. So even when this research says, like, you're better able to detect lies of, you know, the things we've already gone over, you're still terrible, generally speaking, at detecting lies in the lab. Now, is one good at detecting lies in a child, that sort of thing, you know, maybe. Percentage of money the IRS is cheated out of.
Ooh. Percentage of money. So they should be getting 100% of the whatever amount of taxes, then they're only getting N percent. I'm going to say they're cheated out of 30%.
Oh, close. 15.
Oh, man.
In the U.S., anyway. Yeah. Around the world, I think it's different. By the age of 4, percentage of children who have learned the concept of lying. By the age of 4.
Oh, geez. I would hope it's like 80%.
Yeah, 90%.
Okay.
Hope?
I would hope, because if they haven't, then, man, what are we doing wrong here?
Percentage of adults who cannot have a 10-minute conversation without lying at least once.
Oh, jeez. I hope that's low. So 5%.
60%.
Wait. 60% can't lie, can't go without lying?
Yeah. I don't understand that either.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to figure out what lies, what are they constituting as a lie?
Well, yeah, because now we're talking about things like, how are you doing? Oh, fine.
Right.
Okay, you've just lied.
Or, you look great today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or,
because let's be honest,
your cologne isn't that strong, Berto.
Wait, is my cologne that strong?
When you walked in, I mean, I don't know if I'm just...
Yeah.
I was nose blind to you before, but like, wow. Or I haven't smelled cologne.
Ooh, I smell yummy, though.
In a long time.
So wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Because it is true. So I've taken it upon myself in the last, I don't know, decade or so. Whenever someone asks me how I'm doing, I'll be totally honest with them. I'll be like, you know, not that great today. And then it always catches people off. Oh, really? And then they don't really want the details. Mm. So I give them a really quick summary. But I've because, you know, I got tired of saying, oh, I'm fine. Everything's great. Life is peachy.
Right.
But I think most people do, because it's simpler.
Right.
How you doing? Oh, I'm fine.
Right. And we'll get into in a bit why we lie, which that's one of them, is like, it's just easier. Within those 10 minutes in which 60% lie at least once, what's the average number of lies that were told?
Jeez.
So for the average human in a 10-minute conversation, yeah, exactly, 3 lies.
Okay.
Percentage of adults admit to telling a lie often or sometimes?
Percentage of adults admit to telling a lie often.
Percentage of adults.
Oh, percentage.
Who say,
do you, so often. Oh, I see. So,
often,
yeah.
Or sometimes.
Well, in this case, I'm going to say like 70. 70%.
Only 12%. Oh, but this is admitting.
Admitting. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Percentage of people admit to lying on their resumes.
Oh, 20%.
Close, 31%. What do you think they're lying about exactly? Because these are discrete things, right?
Yeah.
You can check.
Well, I know for a fact some people actually literally lie. Because in the past, I've seen people caught for like not having graduated or things like that. But those are kind of extreme.
Yeah, but 31% of human beings in Western society.
What if we're counting like aggrandizing something?
Like what?
Like instead of, you know, I was in charge of water distribution in the West Coast for our business. Okay, describe what that meant. Well, we had a little store. And it was the only store of its kind in the Northwest, and I was the one serving the water. That's a very different thing, right? So, like, you made it sound very grandiose, but it was a very small thing.
Right.
So, I think, and that's an extreme example, but I think people might tweak things up.
Yeah, you know? I bet you another lie is when there's a gap in employment, like they couldn't find a job, or they had a job that they don't want to put on their resume because they got fired or something. They'll fudge the numbers, or they'll say, this year I took a gap year and I traveled Europe.
I've done this on my resume, because guess what? The year I was taking a sabbatical from my normal job of making the triangular ice cubes,
back in like 2009 or something?
Yeah, I don't put that in my resume.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Why not? I mean, you know.
Because I want people to think I've had 40 years experience in the same thing.
Ah, okay. Percentage of adults or percentage of patients who lie to their doctor.
Oh my gosh, that is so weird. Because I know people do this. I know people do this because they get concerned that if they tell the doctor how they're really doing, the doctor's going to like tell them that they're sick and prescribe them things.
Yeah. And or the other side, the doctor won't provide the treatment that they're looking for if they don't amp up their symptoms.
Oh, I see. Lying in either direction. Okay, I could see that. Okay, 60%.
13.
Well, that's not bad.
Percentage lie about their diet and exercise regimens.
Oh, yeah. 25.
Good. 30. Percentage of lies that are discovered in general.
Well, 50.
13. Not a lot. Yeah. All right. Common reasons for lying, Berto. 6 reasons here.
Okay. One reason is like what we were saying. It's just easier. It's like keeping things simpler.
Yeah. So. I'll say it's like the one they list here is to be nice, essentially.
Okay. Okay. The other one is to get out of trouble.
Right. To avoid. Avoid confrontation. Yeah.
The other one would be because you are. I don't know what the category is, but like when you're having an affair or you're cheating someone, you're maliciously doing it to hide.
Get one's way,
sure.
Yeah. And also lying to make yourself feel better, shift blame, and lying to save face. All right, so let's get into the documentary here, Berto. It's called Dishonesty, and it is available on YouTube. You can buy it or rent it. And they have a number of common lies that they talk about in this documentary that they review. One is dating profiles, that people lie on their dating profiles. Why would they do that, Berto?
Well, I can imagine that they're trying to hedge or, you know, make their odds better that someone will, swipe left, swipe right. So they will do things to make themselves appear more desirable. They will up. Annie, you know?
I think that's one for sure. But I think another one is people are ashamed of how they look and don't want to admit to themselves, you know, how they look, or they're afraid that no one's going to ever love them.
So they might say, oh, I'm athletic.
Yeah.
And they don't feel athletic.
Or pictures. That
they might use old pictures.
Right, right.
Very photoshopped.
Right. And I think some people... It's like, well, I don't really have any good pictures of me in the past 10 years. That picture of me 20 years ago is much more representative of how I feel about myself.
Right.
Taxes, another common lie. Why do they do that?
So I think there's probably a couple categories, like at least 2 big ones. One is literally maliciousness, like the criminal type. And I don't mean criminal like professionally, just I'm going to try to get away with as much as I can because I don't want to pay the government. But then there's the other category, which is, this sucks. I shouldn't have to pay this much money. I'm going to fudge this because this is unfair.
Right. You know? You feel justified. Breaking this. Okay. One of the quote unquote lies they said in this documentary was breaking the speed limit. Is that a lie, Berto?
Well, in a way, you're lying to yourself, maybe the people in the car, in that you're pretending that what you're doing is okay. But you are actually breaking the law.
Right, but I wouldn't call that lying. I mean, when I'm breaking the speed limit, if someone asked me, are you breaking the speed limit? I'd be like, yep, my choice, I'm breaking the speed limit.
It is funny to say that the act of breaking the speed limit itself is the lie instead of someone asking you about it. Like, if a cop pulls you over and says, how fast were you going? And you're like, I was going the speed limit. That's a lie.
Right, which I wouldn't do, I don't think. But... I might lie and say I wasn't paying attention, but I don't know what I'd say.
Unless they mean like in general, like if they ask people in general, do you, speed? Maybe in general people say no.
Yeah. I think it's based on this premise that we all took some kind of vow and we swore under oath that we weren't going to break the speed limit, which of course I never did. There was probably some form I signed when I got my license that attested to some dedication to the road laws, but I don't think anyone would call that a lie.
I think the general category would be if you ask 100 people, do you break the law on a regular basis? I would say probably 90% or more would say no.
Yeah.
But in reality, we all technically are breaking laws frequently.
Yeah. I mean, you go 1 mile an hour over the speed limit, that's breaking the law. You don't come to a full stop at a stop sign under most circumstances.
You jaywalk.
Right. It's like I'm breaking the law all the time.
Breaking the law.
Santa Claus is another common lie that they go over.
Oh, yeah. The more general category is the fictions we maintain in this for the sake of the children.
Right. College admissions resumes and lying to get your kid into graduate school.
Oh.
They go over this one case that this woman lied to get her kids into a good school in a different part of town. And she claimed that she lived at her father's house. Her and her kids lived at her father's house when she didn't actually live there. And the district actually went after her, and she spent time in jail. Can you imagine that?
I think it's so lame that you even have that situation. Why are you in a situation where there's a much better school at a place that you can't go to?
Right. Right.
That sucks.
Right. And that the district and the prosecutors don't have other people that they could be going after. Like, I understand, like, a slap on the wrist or...
And it's like, think about what it is for. You tried to get a better education for your child.
Right. And what exactly was stolen? I mean, I guess you could argue that some kid wasn't allowed to get in because of the space.
But it doesn't actually work that way, right?
I don't know.
And the people that do live in the area, they don't tell them, well, it's full.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they do. I don't think they do.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what the point they were trying to make. It almost seemed like they were trying to make this point in the documentary that she had done something wrong. And because in the end of the documentary, she's like, I've learned my lesson. I'm never lying again. And I don't want to show my kids that lying is okay. And I'm like, okay. I mean, good. You don't want to model lying to your children, but at the same time, I don't think that's in the same category. Cause you know, they had other categories of like people lying about insider trading.
Yeah.
And other kinds of obviously criminal acts. And it's I just thought, I've learned my lesson.
I stopped lying, sent my child to the school down the street. They did get stabbed yesterday, but you know, I'm not lying anymore.
Right. Another common lie are children lying to parents. You know, that's a very common thing. Stock traders, insider trading, they go over that. Ashley Madison for cheaters.
So actually, there's a whole category of professions that are built around telling lies as part of the business.
Salespeople.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's not even looked down. I mean, granted, there are extremes, right? Like you could have the salesperson that just flat out lies that there is a car and there's not really a car. Okay, there's extremes. But in general, salespeople are aggrandizing and sometimes flat out lying on a regular basis.
Right.
If you're buying a house, you'll say, are there any problems with the house? The default answer will be like, no, nope. And then you do the inspection and it's like, well, turns out there are tons of problems with the house.
Right. Right. Exactly. And we just sort of live with these realities like that's okay. And I still don't feel good about that. I wish that there wasn't that normalization of lying. Yeah. It really gets me down when I walk, if I go onto a car lot, I just assume that I'm going to get lied to and lied to and lied to. And I probably will.
Yeah.
We just, I don't know, a couple years ago, got a car for Stacy and we're on the lot and I'm very suspicious of everything that's being said. And if I won't go into all the details, but by the end of the whole transaction and the whole kind of shenanigans took about a week to occur. I'm no joke. We were probably lied to like 150 times.
And by the way, you feel really lame by the end of the whole thing.
Yeah. It's like,
you don't
feel
happy that you got your new car.
Yeah.
You're like, ugh.
Yeah. The whole, you just walk away going like, what a bunch of scumbags.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really disheartening. And it actually bumps me out because it's a dealership, a Honda dealership in Linwood. And back in the day when I used to go there, I remember there were no shenanigans. Mm. In fact, they prided themselves on that.
Oh.
They'd come out and say, look, we have five different models of car.
Yeah.
We have the colors that are available on the lot.
Yeah.
There are no options. We're not going to upsell you. The price is on the car. There's no haggling. Choose your car. Go for your own adventure. We don't make commissions, you know, like just... It is what it is.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like,
that's awesome.
Oh. And then I'd go to the Toyota or the Ford and there'd just be all the shenanigans. But now the Linwood Honda, they're up to shenanigans.
I hate that too. Oh, by the way, so I recently bought a car. Very recently, like a month ago.
What kind of car?
It's a Subaru Ascent. It's a SUV.
Oh, that's kind of weird because you don't buy new cars very often.
I don't. Here's what happened, though. I had been leasing a car, and the lease expired in September of last year.
Was it a Hyundai or Toyota?
It was Hyundai, yeah. And then when it expired, I was like, I don't need another car right now, you know? Like, it's pandemic. I'm at home.
Right.
So I didn't renew any lease. I didn't get another car. Well, months went by, and then I found myself, for a couple trips I had to take, I had to rent a car. So then I was like, oh my gosh, now I've rented a car. Now it's getting silly. I need to get a car. So I bit the bullet. Now, I had been waiting for this hybrid car I wanted to buy. So I go to the dealership. I'm like, did you get the hybrid? They're like, we did.
Which?
It was a Hyundai hybrid SUV. And I looked at it, and they had like shrunk them, probably because they had to make them hybrids. So it was like much smaller. It didn't have anywhere near the room. I was like, that's sad. Do you have anything that still has the room of the previous ones? It's like, yeah, we have this other one. I'm like, okay, can I look at those? They're like, well, we have one. It's in the shop right now. I'm like, what do you mean it's in the shop? Oh, it has a factory defect. Well, can we test drive it? It's like, maybe in 2 or 3 weeks. It's like, are you kidding me? So then I left and I went to the Kia dealership and I walk in. And as soon as I walk in, the guy's like, can I help you? Like with a total attitude. And I was like, well, I just wanted to look at your SUV. He's like, oh, yeah, no, we have none. And I'm like, what? Like, you're sold out? He's like, yeah. So I leave and I'm like, what's going on? And then on the way home, all dejected, I go by the Subaru dealership and I'm like, okay, well, I'll try Subaru. I walk in, there's a car in the showroom that's an SUV, and I'm like, ooh, I like that. But same thing, that the person comes up like, can I help you? And like, well, I'm interested in cars like this SUV. He's like, well, no, we don't have any.
What's going on here?
Exactly, right? And I'm like, well, what is going on here? He's like, well, I mean, you could get that one, the one on the showroom. And I ask, what is happening? Did everyone just win the lottery and everyone went out and bought an SUV? And it's this chip shortage. Have you heard of this?
No.
There's this huge microchip shortage because of the huge fire in Japan or something like this. Something happened and all the car manufacturers got affected by this. So there's an incredible shortage. Never, like a once in a lifetime kind of shortage. That's why none of these dealers had the inventory. That's why they were all like shooing me away. So I ended up buying the car that was on their floor because that was the only one I could buy right now.
Right. So the lie is the other dealerships could have just been like...
They could have told me this.
Yeah. They could have been, oh, by the way, you know, just so you know, I'm sorry. Instead of treating you like there's something wrong with you or...
Right. Well, and when I asked like, well, what's... Are there... Can I... order one, they were being really vague about it, like at the other dealership. They're like, well, we could, it's gonna take a while, to be honest. But no one was being clear about why.
Right. Like, why? Like, what does it serve? I suspect they just feel like, well, if we show our hand, then they're just gonna go to another dealership or
did
something.
Did they assume I knew what was happening?
I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, the amount of BS-itude, if that's a word. The amount of liosity that exists in sales is just, yeah. It's gross. And it's another reason why a lot of people are going to online shopping right now. It's just the price that it is.
Yeah.
There's no opportunity for haggling. You just click the button. Yeah. Whereas you go into some of these kinds of places and it's just like you, like you said, you walk out, you feel filthy because even if you did get a good price, you had to fight against some psychopath who's trying to extract as much commission out of you as possible.
And the worst part is that backroom part, right? Because you get done through that first phase, and they're like, great, let's just go sign the papers. And you feel like you're almost done.
No.
And that's where it's just getting started.
Yeah, and that was, again, I won't go into all the details with Stacy's car, but it was that whole thing. I actually had to call them back. So I had to leave in the middle of all that negotiation. No. And I told Stacy, I was just like, you know, be careful about what you sign up for. And they convinced her to sign up for
you need it. Yeah. You need that protection.
Yeah. And I called them back later that night and I was like, how dare you? You know that this doesn't do anything. And I was like, take it off. And he's like, oh, okay, we'll take it off. It's like this.
That's so crazy. I'm glad you did that though.
Oh yeah.
By the way, did I show you my scar?
No. Well, I saw it on the pictures. Yeah.
This is my thyroid. Oh, maybe I showed you on the last, when we...
Do you want to give people an update on what happened?
Well, I had a thyroidectomy, which means they went into my throat, opened it up, and took out my thyroid gland.
Scary.
Yeah. And I could have lost my voice.
And you didn't.
And I luckily didn't.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break, and when we get back, let's talk about more research on lying, and we'll give about 20 seconds to let your voice heal up. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems. But there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back from the break. So, Berto, if someone were to be a salesperson and they were lying to the listeners right now to become a patron, what would they sound like, Berto?
Hey, how's it going? I noticed you were just browsing online. Anything in particular that... actually, you know what? I notice you don't have a watch. You don't wear a watch, huh? Well, I've got a special deal for you. And I'm not actually supposed to tell you about this, so I could get in trouble with my manager. But just between us, we're running a special. If you sign up to be a patron of Psychology in Seattle, you're going to get a special one-of-a-kind watch in the mail. It's going to arrive in 6 to 12 weeks. It's going to be probably signed or autographed. You can't go wrong. And like, I were telling this to maybe our top 0.01% of our customers. So do it. You can't go wrong.
We're going to do an OPP, an old patron praise today. We are going all the way back to February of 2017. These two individuals became patrons all the way back then and have stuck with us the entire time. We have Andy from Vancouver, BC.
Ooh, pee, pee.
And we have Cameron from God knows where, because Cameron didn't include where they're from.
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
So Andy and Cameron, thank you so much for being a patron all the way back in February 2017 and sticking with
Woo!
Us. Okay, so let's talk about gender differences, Berto. Someone in the audience raises their hand and says, hey, what are the gender differences when it comes to lying? Mm. Berto, what do you think the expert on lying said to that?
Well, so back in the savannah, we had to lie for
a living. Oh, God.
Okay. So the expert on lying probably said, men have to lie more.
Well, what he said was, yes, there are tremendous differences in gender when it comes to lying. And the only difference really is that only women ask about gender differences.
He didn't say that.
He did say that.
What?
He said that.
Wow.
And then he said, no, there is, we didn't find any differences among gender when it came to lying.
Oh, okay, good.
But it's kind of interesting that he said that,
he finds that
when he gives these talks, only people who ask about gender differences are women.
That's fascinating.
And there's no differences between men and women when it comes to lying.
That's fascinating.
Now, you know, this is in the lab under very specific circumstances. It's hard. You know, the hard thing about lying research is we can't really know because it's lying.
And how do we know he isn't lying?
Yeah. So in the documentary, he talks about how his research found that we have a cognitive dissonance, if you will, between two things. One, there are many times where we want to lie for various reasons, like we talked about before. Yeah. White lies, trying to get our way, trying to get more money, trying to help our kids out, trying to get out of trouble, trying to cheat. And so we're trying to get our way, but we also have a tremendous need to think about ourselves as good people.
Right.
So how do we reconcile that? Well, there's various different, what he calls fudge factors, that help us to lie and also retain this self-esteem or this self-image that we're good people. And he lists them all out. So I'm going to read them out. So it is, everybody's doing it. So that doesn't make me bad. Conflicts of interest. So if you have some, if you somehow have benefit, which I'll get into later, and you kind of need to lie. Another one is, well, I'm not really hurting anybody. What's the big deal? Like if you're lying on taxes, you're thinking, well, you know, it's the federal government. Who cares?
Right.
Or you, you know, you walk out of the grocery store and you didn't pay for something. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, well, who am I hurting? You know, it's not like a mom and pop operation. This is a corporation. You know, lying for others, like the mom lying for her children. Creativity plays a role in lying, which we'll get into. Lack of supervision, meaning that if no one's minding the store, then individuals become more apt to lie. Social norms, in some circles or cultures or groups, it's more of the norm to lie, like among salespeople, for example. Now, I want to say, obviously, not all salespeople are like that.
Well, no, but okay, so when I was growing up, I don't know if it's still like this. When I was growing up in Bogota, the norm, when I walked into a, not a grocery store, but like little corner stores, which were everywhere, is that if you were not in the neighborhood that you live in, so therefore they don't know you, the norm was that you would get overcharged. Like you would, because they wouldn't have listed prices, right? So you'd be like, hey, I want this little candy and I want this soda.
There were no prices listed?
There's no prices listed. So then they'd be like, well, that's, you know, 300 pesos. And you would know that that sounds high, but you have no... So you're like, okay, here's 300 pesos. But then the next time the neighbor comes in and they're like, yeah, that's 200 pesos. And this was kind of like the norm.
Wow.
And it was, I don't know, it's kind of a protective measure for... I'm going to look out for me and mine because it's a hard culture and there's not a lot of resources, that kind of thing. And that
so
was the way it
sort
was.
Of like you had to be friends with the grocer in order to get like good prices or something.
Yeah. Like if you know the people, you're going to get better prices.
Wow. Yeah. But anyway, not all salespeople are like that, obviously. And I know many of you out there are probably salespeople and are fine. Another reason is fatigue, which we'll get into, distance from the crime and self-deception. So those are the reasons that they came up with as to why we lie. Okay, so they did a number of experiments and they talked about it. Tougher bluff, Berto. People have a physiological arousal when lying for self-gain, but not when lying for charity.
Oh, interesting.
Tougher bluff. Physical arousal when lying for self-gain, not when lying for charity.
I'm going to go tough.
Yes, it's tough. For when we lie... for what we believe to be a good reason, for a charitable reason, a moral reason, our body doesn't have the same physiological difficulty with the lie.
It's a quick math. It's like, you're trying to do something for this kid who needs something. So you immediately go, yeah, no, this is good. It's net good. So yeah, of course I'm going to do this.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting though, because the idea is that when we're lying, we have a physiological arousal because we have fear. We have a fear response, sort of fight or flight response. That the hypothesis around that is that we have the fight or flight response because we're worried about being caught and rejected. Mm-hmm. But somehow when we're doing it for charity, it overrides or we're focused on the good rather than the fear.
Maybe because you've done the math intrinsically that, well, first off, worst case scenario, I'm not the one... who pays the price. Second, they're going to be the ones that look like jerks, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Another experiment, fMRIs. The first lie, big response from the amygdala. Subsequent lies, not so much because of habituation.
Yeah.
Like salespeople, if you are used to lying over and over again, or politicians, yeah, or some other job where there's a lot of lying, your brain just gets used to it, and you no longer notice the difference in the behavior, and you no longer have the fight or flight response.
Well, absolutely. So, like, I do a ton of presentations for my job, you know, because you have to show, you know, the different size of ice cubes and why they're this angle of triangle or not. And I've done these for years.
You don't have to tell the listeners. They've heard it a million times.
I know. I'm
you
sorry.
Talk about...
I love talking about my job, right?
But it gets boring.
I know.
13 years.
I know. So anyways, the point is I do tons of presentations.
Yeah.
But when I first started doing presentations, I would be super nervous. And of course, part of it is stage fright and stuff.
Right.
Because it was pre-COVID.
Right.
But part of it is actually... because when you do a presentation, you're kind of lying a little bit. Mm. You're fudging the things, right? You're saying, they're like, how soon are these new cubes going to be out? And you're like, about 3 months. Now, you know that you just had a conversation with the team that's actually 3.5 months.
I'm going to drill down on that statement a little bit. You said when you present, you're kind of lying.
You're lying a bit.
Only if the presentation involves lies in it.
Well, what I mean is...
But I think what you mean, or what you're telling me, what I'm hearing, is that... in your profession, there's a culture, not only you, but anyone giving a presentation of that type, there are common lies.
Well, yes. And some of it is because, if you're giving a presentation to two people and you're kind of just going back and forth, it's one thing. When you're presenting to 500
you're trying
people,
to sell. You're trying to sell something to those 500
exactly.
people.
Exactly. When you're trying to present to 500 people and you're being completely candid... then they're going to start losing confidence because you're saying, hey, let me tell you the whole backstory. First of all, they don't have the bandwidth or patience to hear it. But if you're telling them, so first we thought we were going to do this, then we second guessed ourselves, and then we changed our plan. And then you start giving them the whole
backstory.
And
we're still not entirely sure.
Now they're like, oh my God, run for the exits, right?
But you're describing the same motivation
as
the salesperson at the lot.
Yes.
They're like, well, look, if I tell him the truth that we don't have the chips, he's just going to walk away.
Right, but there is, I do believe that there are gradients, right? So you could have an experience with a car salesman that is still better, even though they still were selling you a car. And so what happened, though, is over the years, the more presentations I did, it did get easier for me to do presentations and just say what I need to say, even though I am technically obfuscating some of the particulars. And I am not the kind of person that will outright lie, like, did you finish the cubes? And I'll say, yes, but we didn't. No, that's not it.
But it's you're lying by obfuscation.
Yeah, because
you're lying by mild omission.
It's like, do we know, is this strategy going to be successful? It's like, we think it is. But we just had a meeting yesterday with fewer people where we were all very scared that we might be wrong.
Right.
You know?
Right. But I wonder what kind of world we'd live in if people were more honest, because it's not like the people in the audience that at work particularly are thinking that everything you're saying is completely true.
Right.
Because they give the presentations too. They're probably like, well, there's probably stuff going on in the back.
But you are also potentially, or we are also giving all of us too much credit sometimes, because it's one of these, as soon as you open the floor up for opinions, everyone's got an opinion and everyone's an expert. And that's a fact. Like, imagine if you said, hey, the way we're going to run our government now is every single decision is going to be up for a vote by the people.
Yeah, I get it. But imagine if at your place of work, there was a chip that was placed in everyone's head and no one could lie. They had to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth during their presentations. Then I don't think anything would change. The bar of what people understood to be an acceptable presentation would just move further towards the truth. It's not like if everyone told the truth, nothing would get done.
I don't think people could work that way, though.
No, I think they can. I think you underestimate.
Well, but you can't. Well, like, not only would you have to implant that chip, you would have to implant the chip where no one's feelings get hurt. You'd have to implant the chip where biases are okay to hear. You have to implant all these chips, because in reality, if you took away all the lie filters, the person would get up and say, okay, what I'm about to say, you right here might not understand, because the way you look to me, you look a little dumber.
And well, that's just a stupid assumption that the person's making.
Because that's the reality. Yeah, like, that's the reality. That's
Let's put another chip in so they're not stupid and they don't make false
those are not
observations.
Humans. Well, you're talking about computers.
But it doesn't get rid of the white lies. Let's just put it that way.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. There is a net amount of white lies that need to be told in society. And you and I disagreed about this in another episode. And I do believe you need some white lies to make society function because humans can't handle the truth. But there's a big difference between that and actual malicious lying.
Yeah, it's funny. So when I started preparing for this episode, I told producer pod wife Stacy about it. She's like, you know, you already did an episode about about lying. I was like, oh shit, I guess we have. And then I thought, I don't care. If I've essentially forgotten everything we talked about, maybe the listeners have too.
It's fine.
And I'm wondering right now if everything we've said is like just a repeat of what we talked about last time.
I don't think so. First of all, it was not a this documentary. The research questions were different.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Another experiment. They wanted to experiment on this conflict of interest fudge factor. So they had a computer screen with left and right zones.
Okay.
And they would flash a bunch of red dots in the left and right zone.
Mm.
And you had like a second to look at the screen and then guess left or right which side had more dots.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times it was kind of obvious because you could really tell like, oh, obviously left has more dots in it. But then they tell them for the left field, you will get 0 cents.
Mm-hmm.
For the right field, you will get 4.5 cents every time you click. But we don't want you to lie. We want you to actually choose for yourself which side has...
Right.
So the results show a lot more guessing on the right or even lying on the right because you get money. So this demonstrates a conflict of interest when you benefit by lying or fudging a little bit or kind of saying, well, I don't know, kind of looked like maybe the left, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it was the right.
Yeah.
I only saw it for a second. And you aggregate that in a society and you have a lot of these kinds of lies.
So recent example. I'm sure you've heard of the meme stocks.
No.
Okay. So recent phenomena, certain stocks were being massively short. So yeah, like GameStop, these things. Okay.
Well, is Holiday Inn one of them or what was the other one?
Might be. There's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Recently, AMC is the big one.
Right, AMC, right.
But here's what's happening. So a lot of the participants in the meme movement, they'll tell you, they'll swear up and down, they will write it on their gravestone that they believe in the company and that's why they're doing it.
Right.
Now, maybe the asterisk second story is we're doing this to take back the control of Wall Street for the little people. Like that's the narrative.
But when they are very convincing about, even to themselves, about that rhetoric, they make literally millions of dollars.
Yeah. And they only do that by finally selling at some point.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you, no, I'm never going to sell.
Right.
So it's one of these like things that, it's self-justification. Like you're saying, it's a conflict of interest.
Right. Another experiment, they took a bunch of vending machines and they spread them out around a campus, college campus. They designed the vending machine to give you the snack, but also your money back in whole. And there's this sign on the top that says, if there's something wrong with this machine, please call this number.
Oh, okay. So it's pretending like there's something wrong with it.
Right. How many people called, Berto?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, percentage.
I just want you to know, I would have called. But
would you have really called?
Oh, absolutely.
You put in 50 cents.
Yep.
You get the M&Ms and the 50 cents.
Yeah.
You're going to call.
Yeah.
It's such a small thing, though.
I know, but I do go out of my way with
this. I kind of feel like I do, too. Like, just as an example of, you know, God knows, Berto, if we're just lying to ourselves. But when I see garbage on the ground outside, or if I see a rock that's in the middle of the road, I actually
I do that. No, but I'm not. The reason I know I'm not lying is because this was my dad's influence on me as a kid. He was militant about it. And he would point out, you see that? And Bogota was a mess. And he would be like, look at how much garbage is. So like it imprinted in me to do that. But anyways, so I'm going to go with 12%.
No one called.
0%?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Sad panda.
So why would they lie, Berto?
I mean,
it's not lying, really.
It's such a small amount of money. The machine, there's probably something. Maybe I didn't put the coins in. Whatever. I just got lucky.
Yeah.
Okay, I will admit this. Maybe if it just happened to me once, maybe I would just walk away.
Yeah, because I could imagine myself not calling. I imagine I wouldn't call, mostly because I'd think, you know, if I call this number, I'm going to get this long kind of ordeal. And, you know, it's probably an anomaly. It probably doesn't happen all the time.
Wait, no, I'm going to take it back, because what I'm thinking about is, if I walk up to a machine that doesn't have such a sign and this happens to me, yes, I'm probably going to just walk away, because what would I do about it? But if there's an explicit sign that says, if there's something wrong with this machine, call this number.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Then I feel bad if I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to think I'm similar to you.
Like, I've called 911 multiple times on the freeway when I see someone doing something.
Well, absolutely. Me too. Yeah. I feel like me and 911, we know each other. Like, I'll see some, I just immediately call. I have no.
Is this Kirk Honda?
Yeah. Something will happen. Like, there was this huge ruckus on our street. This car was going up and down at like 4 a.m, like, lighting fireworks off and screaming and stuff. And the pod wife is like, what do we do? I was just like, let's call 911. She's like, call 911? Really? I'm like, well, yeah, that's what it's for. I feel like most people are shy about calling 911. It's like, I have no shyness. It's like, you know, and they appreciate it, I think. I mean, they want to know about that kind of, anyway. Another experiment is they give a test to a paper test in the lab, and there's a bunch of trivia questions, and they're really hard. And then you fill out you answer the questions, and then they give you the answer sheet, and they tell you to correct your own test. And then you shred your test, your test sheet, and you report to the person at the front of the room how many you got right. And you get $1 for every correct answer.
Yeah.
But the shredder is actually a fake shredder that they can actually open up and see actually how many you got right.
That's awesome.
What percentage cheated, Birdo? Mm. So remember, so you have 0% cheating and 100% cheating. What, between 0 and 100, what percentage cheated?
60%.
Close, 70%.
Wow.
So
it's such a trivial thing.
Most,
that gives you no benefit. Oh, well, it gives you a little money.
Gives you an extra $5.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing your life, as these are college students, I'm guessing your life isn't hanging in the balance. Although,
you could get that extra coffee.
I mean, for sure. When I was in college, $5 meant a lot, believe me. But at the same time, it's interesting, right? And this is their main experiment that they did. And
I think it's because the stakes are so low. So what if I lied in this thing?
Right. Well, again, you're saying, this is the university. They have a lot of money. I'm paying a lot of money in tuition.
Right. You're justifying a lot of things.
It's just $5. Who cares?
Who cares? They're not telling me I have to be.
I'm sure everyone else is lying, you know, that kind of thing.
Plus, there's, in this case, since it's kind of a test of your intelligence, you might be like,
right,
I want to appear smarter.
Right. Because it is kind of public. You at least have to tell a few people so they can give you the money, and people might be listening in.
This is why on Quora, you know, Quora, where people ask questions and like experts answer. One of the most popular categories I've seen recently is about IQ. And everyone in the comments is like, well, I have a 160 IQ, and I can tell you from experience that blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so every now and then you'll see a comment like, wow, there's a lot of hyper geniuses in this thread.
Right. So, and we'll get to that in a second, is the anonymity of the internet, which can increase lying. So they found that different types of cheaters. They found three different groups. One group is the 30%. I mean, I guess the nice thing is 30% told the truth.
Right.
When they absolutely didn't have to. So you have 30% of people who tell the truth. They must be, I'm guessing you and I would be like that, where we're pretty dedicated to the truth. We're pretty, you know, we have like a spoken value of, hey, even if I would get an extra $20 from this, I don't know if I can live with myself, because I want to be principled. Like, not only do we have a principle, but we also have a principle about being principled.
Right. And I'm also older now. So when I was young, there are certain things that I feel like I probably would have fudged because of self-confidence. Like, you know, when I was younger, I didn't want to look bad as much. Whereas now, as I'm older, I don't care if I look bad about something.
Right.
You know?
Right. More self-confidence. You're just like, I don't care. I have confidence in other arenas that have compiled enough self-esteem that I don't need other sources of self-esteem. Yeah. And actually, I find that to be true in a lot of aspects. Like, as I gain more, the amount of respect that I'm given, and thus the better I feel about myself, the much easier it is for me to admit I did something wrong professionally, you know?
Right.
Actually, God, okay, I got to tell a story, Berto. So last night I'm teaching a class, and I know some of my students are listening right now. I am in class, and I am giving a presentation, giving a lecture and from my notes, and some of the students say, wow, you know, there's a lot of information here. Can you just give us your notes? Because I'm having a hard time, you know, writing all this stuff down. Mm-hmm. It'd be so much easier if you just gave us your notes, and then we wouldn't have to be scrambling in our note taking. And I was like, you know, I don't like giving my notes out because I never know what's in my notes.
Plus, that's kind of cheating yourself out of the one of the ways to learn is to be able to.
Yeah, but it was an overwhelming amount of items that I was throwing at the students, which I got. But at the same time, I was thinking, well, this isn't really a critical lecture. This is kind of like an extra lecture.
Sure.
It's not going to be in the test, that kind of thing. We don't give tests, but you know what I mean. And on the fly, while I'm teaching the class over Zoom, of course, I go, okay, fine. And so I quickly clean up my notes, and it looks pretty good, and I email it to everyone. About 20 minutes later, I'm going over, I'm lecturing more, and I'm looking at my notes, and then I find at the bottom of my notes are, what, I don't know, 30 pages of other notes that I didn't vet before I emailed it out to
you. Oh, God!
And I'm scrolling through it, and there's information on there, private information.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Becky.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Private information about me, private information about people I know, you know, like notes to myself.
Yeah.
Private information, Berto, about you.
Woo-wee!
Yeah. And I start to sweat. My stomach starts to gurgle. Crapping a brick. And I just say in the middle of class, I'm like, oh, my God, y'all. I sent you something, and I thought it was client information, actually.
Oh, okay. That would be super.
Which it didn't actually turn out to be that way, but it looked like it could be client information. And I was like, I just sent you client information, so can you all delete it? There's 13 students. There's not a lot of them. But still, you think, well, so now we're getting back to this lying thing, right?
Did they delete it?
Well, they were, I mean, most of them were pretty... you know, they seem trustworthy, but who knows? I don't know these people that well.
Oh my gosh. That's why I saw that rumor pop up on the internet about me last night.
Yeah. So
it's trending on Twitter.
Well, so I'll tell you what was on the document in a second, but I am, and I'm kind of going off for about 5 minutes. Oh my God. I feel so stupid.
Oh no.
Have I just ruined my life? And then I started thinking, I was like, I felt compelled to tell my students that I don't do this very often because I don't.
Yeah,
like this sort of thing, I don't. And I was trying to think of the last time this happened to me.
Right.
Where you have that sick feeling of like, oh my God, wow. I just revealed information I leaked information accidentally. The last time I can remember having done this was in 1997.
Oh my God.
When I thought I reply-alled.
Oh no.
To like 30 different of my friends, like a private joke about someone else.
Oh shoot.
And I lied awake at night.
Oh no.
Like freaking out that I had completely just made fun of someone in the open on a reply all. Oh. And this is back when Microsoft Outlook, I don't know what it was called back then, but it was the email app.
Yeah, what was it called? Darn it.
Yeah, it was called something else.
MS Mail.
Maybe.
Yeah.
There was no logging of sent emails. So once you sent an email, there was no way to find out what did I send and to whom did I send it to. So I just had to wait. And also back then, you know, now you would just email one of your friends and say, did I reply all?
Yeah, yeah.
But back then, I feel like mail was treated like actual mail. Like you don't really you don't send mail just willy nilly.
It was very mechanical.
Yeah. you send an email once every now and then, you know, it's like a letter you're sending. You don't just send one question. Anyway, it turned out I did not reply all. I actually just replied to the one person I was hoping to. But that's the last time I can remember having done something like that. But it's funny, I told this story to the pod wife, Stacy, as well, and she had a very similar reaction to you. She was just like, wow. And I'm just so glad that people understand the mortification factor. Have you ever done anything like that?
Oh, I mean, yeah, not maybe that bad. Or I have at work where similar thing, not recently, when it was younger, when the whole thing was younger, there were a couple of cases. One of them was an anger reply that I immediately regretted. It's the kind, it's back when, before I realized that, oh, you shouldn't reply right away to things, you know, if you're, especially if you're emotionally charged.
Right.
But I remember I got this email and just like, can't believe they said that. She's like, brrrr, reply. Then as soon as I hit reply, I'm like, oh no, this is going to be bad. That one did happen. It was, I didn't make, you know, I really did hit reply, and then I had to spend like a whole 2 weeks of meetings to try to like smooth things over and blah, blah. All right.
But then what did you say? Did you say like, I'm sorry, I was angry?
Oh, how did I make it up?
Or a monkey got on my
laptop? No, I had to admit that this is how I felt, but I shouldn't have said it that way, and it's not appropriate, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like I was cussing anyone out. It was just I was being way too honest. But there was another time where I did think I had done a reply all to a ridiculously large alias. It was probably 2,000 people. Like 2,000 people. But you know what happened? Oh my God, I was so mortified. And actually, the contents weren't that bad. But it was the kind of thing where a whole bunch of random strangers were in the company. We're going to get this email with no context, and we're going to be super upset. And I was talking about a project that we were kind of being hush-hush about. So I hit send, and I was like, oh my God. But I was so lucky that like it took minutes. It took like 5 minutes. Imagine how I was sweating bullets that whole time. And I didn't even, I to your point, I could have gone out of my office and asked someone else, like, did you get this email? But I was petrified. I was just sitting there in the office not knowing what to do. Yeah. 5 minutes later, an email comes in the inbox, and it was a rejection. This alias had a protection in it, where they didn't allow just anyone to reply all.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, thank goodness. So I was saved by the bell.
Oh my God. Yeah, so incidentally, what was in the document turned out to be not confidential information. The information about you was stuff we talked about on the podcast. I was taking notes as you were talking on a podcast that goes out to literally every human on the planet. And
so
other stuff on there was essentially that. It was essentially stuff that people knew was going to be public. Yeah. But at the same time, I don't want my students looking at my private notes, even if it is technically not confidential information. It's like, these are my notes. And so I just felt so dumb for not making sure before I sent it. But anyway.
Oh, you know, I just remember another time where there were two people with the same name, same first name for sure, and the last name had like the same first few letters. And there was a feature in Outlook where it auto-completes.
Right.
Okay. And this was in a super high secretive project I was working on. And I go, I type in the first few letters, auto-completes, I type in my email, and I clicked send. And then I got a reply back from this other person saying, I don't think you meant to send this to me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, but this is super secret. Please don't tell anyone. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I guess all the texting mistakes that people make. Okay, so in the documentary, they presented this research, and the 70% people cheated in this shredding experiment, but they found that there were three different groups. There's the 30% that did not lie. And then there was another third or something that were the little cheaters. Back up. So you had the 30% that didn't lie. And then you had something like 65 or 67% of people that just lied a little bit.
Okay.
So they got four right, but they said they got six right or something. But then there was this really small group of people, like, I can't remember the exact percentage, 1 to 3%, that they called the big cheaters.
Mm.
And they would lie about getting almost every answer correct.
Oh my God.
And I think it was up to 25 or maybe it was 30 questions or something. And the average person got 4 right. So they were very hard questions. And there's this small group of people that would say, yeah, I got 26 right.
Well, and
even though they probably only got like 3 right.
And in a way, by doing that, they kind of trumped everyone else's results.
So then they do an experiment on bankers versus politicians, apropos of nothing. Who cheats more, bankers or politicians?
Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Politicians.
Bankers.
Bankers?
Twice as much.
Oh, I guess that's no mystery considering the worldwide crash we experienced.
Another experiment, they have an actor come into the room who they hand out the tests, and like 2 seconds into the administration of the test, there's 30 questions or something. 2 seconds in, he stands up, he's like, I'm done. And he walks up to the front and he says, yeah, I got them all right.
What? But this is an actor.
He's an actor. Okay, so all the participants are watching a fellow test taker just obviously lie and scam $30 out of the.
So it legitimizes them.
So what happens to the participants in a situation like that?
I imagine the percentage of lies goes up.
Right. Then they did another experiment where the actor was either like the students or unlike the students. So all the students are at a particular university. And so if the if the actor has a college sweatshirt from a rival college, what do we see there?
Oh, interesting. The line goes down.
If what?
If the opposite university is there.
Exactly.
Because you're like, well, we're not going to cheat.
Right. Whereas if one of your fellow comrades lies, you're like, hilarious. Well, you know, he's one of us, so, yeah. You know, I'll just follow in his footsteps. Another experiment, this is the fudge factor of distance from the action. So they instead design the experiment, instead of walking up and just getting cash, you walk up and say, I got 20 right, and they give you 20 tokens.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to a table right next to the tokens, and you turn in the 20 tokens for money. How does the lying stay the same, go down, or increase?
Okay, so in one case, it's just tokens. In the other one case, you get money.
No, one is just money. You walk up and you say, I got 20 right, and they hand you $20. Another one, you walk up, I say, I got 20 right. They give you 20 tokens.
Yeah, okay.
And
I'm going to go with more lying with tokens.
Yeah, why?
Because the tokens are even less, it's more abstract. It's like, I'm just getting tokens. Who cares?
Right. It's a distance from the action. It doubled the cheating rate.
Wow, doubled.
Right. Even though the money station is literally 2 feet from the token station.
This is what you see. Let's take the Enron thing.
Yeah.
In that Enron documentary, they have the audio of the traders turning off the power.
Right.
But they're so disconnected from what's the actual pain.
Right.
But even that, right? And then you take the derivatives trading in the 2008 crash, right?
Yeah.
They're so disconnected from the mortgages.
Right. Yeah. Or you're a politician,
right,
and you're lying about something that affects a district that's not even in the state that you're in.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, well, who cares? Yeah. It doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
Or you're a drone operator and you're dropping bombs on people.
Oh, right. I just see black and white. I see little things from the top down, and I don't know.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems. But there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Another experiment, same experiment, but they varied it. They had people just recall the Ten Commandments. They didn't show them the Ten Commandments. Uh-huh. They just gave them a piece of paper and said, recall as many Ten Commandments as you can.
Okay.
For religious people, did the cheating rate change?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go more cheating for religious people because they feel guilty that they don't remember them. Whereas for the non-religious, like, I don't know. I don't care.
So for atheists, you're thinking what?
I'm thinking for the atheists, they don't feel guilty that they didn't remember all the Ten Commandments. So they're not going to lie about them as much.
So what they found was that for religious people, no cheating.
Wow. Okay. Because one of the Ten Commandments is you can't lie. So
for atheists, no cheating.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So everyone, regardless of religion, you prime them by saying, remember the Ten Commandments, which reminds, even for atheists, reminds you essentially of the laws of humans.
I see.
And then there's no cheating. So most people say, thou shalt not lie. Most people know, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not kill. Those are the ones that people remember. And then when you're sitting there and you're like, well, I'm sorry,
I misunderstood. So this was a thing that they did in addition to the actual test they were going to take.
Right.
So before they took the test, they said, hey, think of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
I thought that it was, we're going to test you on your knowledge of the Ten Commandments.
Right. Yeah. Sorry.
Now I get it, and it totally makes sense, because you're like, hey, think of the punishment you will receive if you lie.
but the idea is, since atheists don't believe they're going to get punished, and yet they still
remember that, hey, you know, this is a social contract here.
Right. I think it reminds people, it primes people, or nudges, as psychologists will, social psychologists call, in this reminder of, remember that there are human values.
But no cheating.
And so the lesson here is that when you have frequent reminders, we like to think of ourselves as free thinking people.
Yeah.
That we wouldn't be affected by such a trivial thing. Someone walks in and says, hey, by the way, there's a Ten Commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. Here's a test. You wouldn't think that would affect you. You'd think like, look, I do what I want. I'm either going to cheat, or even you and me.
Yeah.
We think, well, would I cheat in a situation that we're going, I don't think I will. But when they do all these different experiments,
it turns out that
we would be swayed in a variety of ways. Like if we sat down and someone that seemed like us started to cheat, then we might cheat too.
So that's an argument in favor of, so there's this debate between the Sam Harris's of the world and the Jordan Petersons of the world. The Jordan Petersons of the world think that not only do you need the results or the net takeaways from the religious backstories, but you actually need to sort of believe in the backstories quite literally, because they believe if you throw all that away, society could collapse. And then you have the Sam Peterson side or Sam Harris side, which is more like, no, we can absolutely extract the learnings and then keep those as our social values. This experiment is interesting because you would expect sort of and granted, it's just one experiment, but you would expect that if you needed the metaphysical significance to be there, that the atheist would have still cheated.
Right. But it shows that human values transcend religion.
Yeah.
Religion just seemingly absorbs the natural human tendency for values rather than religion defining human values.
Right.
And a lot of historians and anthropologists will state this, of religion seems to possibly have emerged from the need for values and for protocol to get along, and you just start to attribute it to gods so that people will take it to heart more.
Yeah.
But it began with a thou shalt not steal, because our tribe falls apart when you steal from people. You know, there's 300 of us. If you steal, then we have fights and murders and chaos.
Oh, that's going to be so confusing when the aliens arrive, because the aliens are going to tell us, hey, just so you know, please, humans, avoid saying words like whatchamacallit and, you know, vague words, because if you keep that up, these big, gigantic beasts are going to come and swallow your planet. And then, of course, we're going to think that they're trying to give us the metaphysical to keep us in line, and we're going to not take them too seriously. And then it's going to turn out that they weren't lying. There are big beasts that are going to swallow our planet.
Yeah.
And we're going to be like, oh, it's those whatchamacallits. They were real.
So another experiment, they did it around the world, different countries, different cultures, differences, Berto, between different
cultural differences,
different cultures around the world.
Yeah, I could see some happening. As I was saying, I saw it myself. Another example of a cultural difference that comes to mind is bartering systems.
Yeah.
It's haggling. Haggling.
Yeah.
In some cultures, there is kind of this understanding that when you go to buy something, you're going to haggle.
Right.
And haggling, I wouldn't call it exactly lying, but you're certainly not being clear about what the price is.
Well, you're assuming that the seller is lying about what the bottom,
I'm not going to pay that much.
And the sellers know they have to lie about what the quote-unquote price
is. But it's an understood thing. And in fact, it's kind of weird if you don't do it.
Right.
And similarly, the example I was giving about Bogota when I was growing up, and it wasn't just Bogota, it was kind of like country in general. It wasn't great, but there was like this cultural need for it, maybe, where it's like, look, there's not a lot of money to go around. I don't trust you because you're not from around here. I'm going to need to hedge my bets here.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Right. So there are experiments or data that show that the tax compliance and tax lying by taxpayers in different countries varies widely. The United States actually has a really high tax compliance and a really low tax lying rate. Other countries, it's just assumed that like 95% of people are just blatantly lying on their taxes.
Another example along those lines, I think you might have seen this even when you were there, but it used to be chronic growing up again in Bogota. No one respected stoplights. And stop signs. No one.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a red light didn't mean you have to stop. There's a red light meant.
Right. Not as long
as no one's here, I'm just going to run it.
Right. Not that Colombians are a-holes, but it's like, well, if no one else is following it, then why would I?
Right.
It's just stupid. Like, that's dumb. It's similar to jaywalking in Seattle. It's like, why would you be a schmuck and stand at the... Yeah. At the red light when no cars are coming, when everyone else is just crossing the street, you know what I mean? But actually what they found in the experiment with this shredding money thing, no differences.
No differences.
So what that shows is that humans, on average, have a tendency to lie that is very similar across cultures.
And then you just have different norms, local norms, but that's not the same as people's propensity for lies.
Different norms, different cultures, different societies, different demands. You know, if poverty is more of a factor, then you're going to be more desperate, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not that Americans are more trustworthy. It's that our system is set up to promote more trustworthiness.
Yeah.
And this flies in the face of a lot of people's notions of, well, you know, Italians, they're a bunch of shysters over there.
Yeah.
Which actually doesn't turn out to be true.
I do wonder about, and I don't know if you're getting to this, social, economical differences in these kinds of money-based lies.
I'm not, but they didn't go over that. But for sure, we could imagine more desperation affecting things. But at the same time, I wonder, because I could see a society, who knows, where things are, you know, spread pretty thin. Very few people have cell phones. Very few people have running water. They can't afford it. Their homes are pretty modest, if you will. And yet, honesty, because of the way people feel in their community, might be quite high.
It's just one of these things where, for example, again, just referencing what I grew up with, the street culture was a culture of constant need to deceive. Because, you know, you'd pull up in your car at the corner, and the whole thing is they're always trying to get a buck because they need to, right? And a lot of times these would be young kids being used by older adults, and they get trained.
Right.
They get trained on how to scam.
Why? Because those kids and the pimps, if you will, literally wouldn't be able to eat if they didn't do that job because they're being discriminated against.
So it's like, to your point, it's not that this human has a higher propensity genetically to lie.
Right.
It's that in their circumstances, that's the culture.
Right. There's no other way, or seemingly no other way. So if you have a society that supports people so they can get jobs, then there's no need to, you know, people don't want to lie is the point. All right. So I just want to go over some famous liars. When you think of like famous liars, who comes to mind, Bruno?
The Ponzi scheme guy, Bernie Madoff.
Right. He ran the largest Ponzi scheme in history, worth about $65 billion. What's a Ponzi scheme, Bruno?
Ponzi scheme is based on a dude that was literally named Ponzi. It's where you essentially say, look, you give me money, I'll give you back more money than you gave me. But then you go and do that to many people. And what you're actually doing is you're using the money they're giving you to sort of pay off the initial investors. But you're not intending to pay off everyone because you can't, because there's no real investment. And then you're hoping to grab the money and either run or keep it going until luck runs out. And that's it. It's a pyramid. It's made out of cards.
Right. We did an episode on Tanya Head, who was the Spanish woman who claimed to be a survivor of the attacks of the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and she was interviewed often.
That's crazy.
She became president of the World Trade Center Survivors
That's
Network
crazy.
Support Group. And it turned out she wasn't even in the U.S. during 9/11. We also have we did an episode on Lance Armstrong.
All right.
For his lying. Bill Clinton lied. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Well, and then you have people like OJ, and you have people like Bill Cosby, and you have people like, you know, like, especially the OJ one is really interesting, right? Just one of these, like, a lifetime of now maintaining that semblance of, you know.
Yeah. Milli Vanilli.
Oh my God, yes. I was just listening to a Milli Vanilli song on the weekend.
Girl, you know it's true. James Fry, who wrote A Million Little Pieces, the book.
Oh, the Oprah thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stephen Glass, who
was that one?
He was a news reporter for the New Republic, Harper's, and Rolling Stone. He wrote a bunch of articles, and he basically just made them up. There's actually a pretty interesting movie called Shattered Glass, starring Hayden Christensen, who plays
interesting.
Him.
Interesting.
Tucker Max, they actually talk about this in the documentary. He was this guy who wrote this really famous book about being a douchebag.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember this one, yes.
Yeah. And they essentially, this is the early days of the internet, and they use the internet to lie and to say, like, the feminists are coming after us, when the feminists weren't coming after them. And then that would cause actual feminists to go, hey, wait a second, there is something wrong with this book. And then the anti-feminists would fight, you know, and they would create all these, they would send thousands of fake emails and internet posts to create this illusion of a debate. And then people actually were like flies to shit, just like came to the debate. And then, of course, the sales went through the roof of the book. You know?
What about Dan Bilzerian? You know that one?
No, who's that?
He was an internet celebrity. He would post all these videos and things of how rich and how wealthy he was, and how he'd have all these crazy parties, and like he was just a jet setter. But he was faking it. Like, he would rent these very expensive places. He was massively in debt, and he'd like, and it was just, it came out finally, and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also have Brian Williams. You remember his lie?
Wait, Brian Williams.
He's a news anchor kind of person.
Right, what was the lie?
Well, he claimed that a military helicopter.
The helicopter, yes.
Yeah, that he was in had been forced down after being hit by an RPG.
Which is such a weird.
Yeah.
Like, why did you need that?
Well, so this is actually an interesting lie. Brian Williams really got dinged for it. He's back on TV now, but And there's been a lot of actual debate about it that I haven't really appreciated. So what happened, as far as I can tell, is that he was in Iraq during one of the wars, and he was in there were a series of helicopters, and one of the, and this is the truth of what happened. One of the helicopters in that crowd of helicopters was forced down due to weather. But it was like very far away from his helicopter. So by the time he lands, he hears, oh, one of our helicopters that was in our convoy that was way back there had to force land because of weather. Okay. So he's in Iraq and he is incentivized to kind of play that up. So when he tells, because, you know, reporters go to the scene of the these wars, not to necessarily report on what's happening, or at least part of the reason. But another part is to bolster their career of like, I was there.
Right.
I was there when this happened.
I was there in the crap.
And they want to get that shot of them right there. And so he's probably telling someone, this is all speculation on my part from this point forward. He says, you know, a week later, he's like, yeah, it was kind of crazy. We were in helicopter and this helicopter was forced down from weather. It was like, I saw it right next to me. And then a year, and this is many years, you know, and a year later, he's like, oh, yeah, one of the helicopters was actually hit by an RPG and had to be landed.
That's a big leap.
Right. And then another year later, he's like, yeah, actually, our helicopter was hit by an RPG and we were forced to land.
It's so weird, though. I mean, like, okay, you've heard my story of me in Miami getting pulled over with my friends in the Jaguar. If you don't remember it, I'll tell it in our 13-year anniversary.
Yeah.
I'll tell that one. But to me, it's the equivalent of every time I tell it, there's FBI helicopters. Right. Now there's tanks. Now there's...
So it's not normal behavior.
No.
Now, does memory morph over time? Yes. And this is the argument that a lot of people are saying.
Sure.
It's like, well, look, hey, everyone, because there's this huge backlash on him.
Yeah.
And then other people are coming out saying, hey, you don't understand how memory works, man. Memory is malleable, and like it doesn't work like that. And I'm like,
to an extent.
to an extent, but not like that. It'd be one thing if he forgot why the helicopter had to land. Like he's like, well, yeah, we were told a helicopter had to land. I think it was hit by an RPG. And then three years later, he's like, yeah, one of the helicopters. But to claim that your helicopter was hit by an RPG, you would remember not just that detail. You would remember the explosion, the terror.
Do you remember when I had to come down to Cuba and bail you out of that jail cell?
Yeah, right.
Isn't that how it happened? I mean, you know, memory is malleable, so maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
Right, exactly. It's like, so people were reporting that memory is malleable. Yes, but if memory's that freaking malleable, then literally none of our memories are even remotely close to. Now, are our memories not exact? Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But that one would be pretty hard.
This is a Family Guy style memory.
And he also said these things publicly. So that's how that's how they knew the progression of his lie, is he would say this on the air. So then the other thing is like, okay, what about self-deception? Because it furthers your career, or at least your grandiosity and your narcissism, to brag that you were in the shit, man. And people convinced themselves. So was it a lie, or was it a brag that you just slowly started to believe about yourself? I could see either thing happening.
I've seen those. There is at least one person that I know who told a lie about their education, and then after many years,
believe it.
I could swear that they believe it.
Yeah. But at what point, if you're Brian Williams, especially a public figure talking on the news, do you say to yourself, as you're about to tell that story for probably the 200th time, do you say to yourself, wait a second.
Yeah.
Let me go back to this memory. Am I sure that this is? Because there are times when I do that. I'll be telling a story, and halfway through the story, I'm like, well, wait a second. Actually, I know enough about myself to know that maybe I'm actually fudging this a little bit because I want this thing to be true.
Well, like the time you were being carried through the parade in New Orleans and everyone broke out into the Twist and Shout song and you stood up and sang it like Ferris Bueller?
Well, so the first part of what you said is actually true. I was carried through the parade in New Orleans because I was on a hospital gurney last.
Wait, but the second part isn't true? Because that's how I remember it.
Yeah.
Rashomon, baby.
Yeah. But also, that wasn't New Orleans. It was Chicago. Come on. All right. So let's go into our lies, Brito. So what are some recent lies? Give me your recent lies that you've committed recently.
All right. So recently, I convinced myself to an extent and an agent and some people like my mom that I wanted a new house, that I wanted to sell my house and move.
Why?
Well, because what happened is I heard that a house like two blocks away sold for an ungodly amount of money, way more than it should have. And so then I started thinking, oh man, if I sold my house, I could move south, like to Tacoma, and get a much bigger house, and it would be glorious.
Wait, where's the lie?
Well, the lie is that I didn't want to move, but yet I got a real estate agent.
Wait, so
I
you're just kind of
looking at places. I went to multiple places.
Were you just tricking yourself?
I was not only tricking myself.
That's not a lie.
Well, I think it's a lie because if you had asked me, just like, stop, Barrow, for a second. Do you want to move? I would have told you no. Then you would have been like, why are you doing this? And I would have said, because I want to have both.
Okay.
And so I went, I talked to a lender. I was 1 minute away from signing an offer letter.
What?
I was 1 minute away from signing an offer letter.
Oh my goodness.
I would have moved. To do these podcasts, I would have had to tell you we can only do it like once a month or something.
Yeah. All right. So one of my lies is, and actually, I don't know if I'm lying to myself or I'm actually not a liar or there's not a lot of opportunity. You know, one of the nice things about my career is I have a lot of control over my career. And I think that that actually allows me to tell the truth a lot. Like, I don't have to save people's feelings. I don't have to convince anyone of anything.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of opportunities for me to lie, really. But anyway, I was really trying hard to think of some lies that I said. But I did lie to by omission to my wife that so someone has been stalking me.
Oh, boy.
Not terribly.
Okay.
But I won't go into the details, but there's an individual who is, we'll just say, mildly stalking me.
I mean, the messages I send you are all in good intentions.
Well, you know, just don't. It's not okay. And I immediately wanted to tell Stacy because it just was interesting on some level and I felt like she should know. And then I stopped myself and I was like, nope, if I tell her, she's going to freak out. And in the back of my mind, I felt ashamed because I brought this on our family.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to feel that shame.
Oh, no.
So I didn't tell her. But then eventually, once it seemed to have gotten to a point where there wasn't really anything to worry about, then I told her. Mm. But I did. That is a lie by omission. It's something that she would want to know.
Yeah.
That is obvious that I would tell her. And I stopped myself because I wanted one, I didn't want to scare her. So it was a bit of altruism.
Yeah.
But also I didn't want her to say, your career did this to us, kind of a thing. Tell me about another library.
Wait, did you find a dead bunny in your, in your pot? Okay. Was it a bunny? No, it was like,
Oh,
it was a bunny.
It's a white rabbit.
It's a white rabbit. Okay. Okay. So this one, it happened more than once. And you'll probably understand why, but it was still a lie. Saying that I felt fine, that I felt healthy, that I felt okay.
Yeah.
Multiple times in my work context and to some of my other friends. See, with you and with Ron, for example, I was very open about, hey, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going through.
With your thyroid.
With everything that started happening to me all last year and into the whole thing. But as we talked... Not at first, right? Remember that first time in the hospital a year and a half ago? I didn't tell you. I was all by myself.
Right.
So we had that conversation. Well, but this time I was better. I at least told you. I told Ron. I told a couple people. But there's a lot of people I didn't tell anything about. And so much so that we had been texting about stuff all through that time. And then later they found out and they're like, wait, what? And at work, professionally, I had to mention some things to like my boss to say, hey, I might have to miss some time because of this and that. But there were many times I was like, so are you feeling okay? Because it's okay if you want to take time off. And I'm like, no, I feel fine.
So why did you lie?
I didn't. Okay, there were probably three things. Number one, if I'm being fully honest, I think that confronting the reality of the situation scared me. So saying like, I'm actually really not doing well.
Kind of like you're disabled.
Yeah, I'm kind of disabled.
Yeah.
That scared me. Number two, I didn't want to miss out. I've had this thing my whole life. I think we've talked about this.
Yeah, when you were four and your parents were partying downstairs and you were like, hey, you guys.
It wasn't even my parents, right? It was my, I woke up from a nap in the middle of the day and I heard fun voices from my cousins and my grandma downstairs. And I was devastated.
FOMO.
I ran downstairs. I was like, hey, what is happening? But it was deeper than that. It was me missing out on my mom. It was me missing out on, you know, a lot of things. So I felt like if I say I'm actually as sick as I am, they'll be like, well, take a health leave. And then I'll miss out. And then I'll have to like not be at work. And then someone else will have to do my job. And
you'll become obsolete.
And no one knows how to make those triangles like I do. What the hell? Okay, and then there was a third reason.
I mean, to be fair, no one does know how to make those triangles like you do.
That's true. But there was a third reason. And this one is kind of funny. Because of the pandemic, I was able to get away with it. Because you know what I could do? I could take a break. I could go lie in my own bed for 15 minutes and then feel better and then coming down and keep working.
Right.
Whereas if I had been in an actual office, I couldn't have.
Right.
So it's, yeah.
My second lie is I knowingly exaggerated, I think, in a Yelp review the other day.
From a restaurant or something?
Yeah. So me and the pod wife, we go out because now we're fully vaxxed and seemingly everyone in Seattle is fully vaxxed as well. And we go to a restaurant in Ballard and sit down and the host sits down. So, here's a seat for you. Sit down. And we're sitting there. And we're sitting there. And we're sitting there. Hmm. No menu. Hmm. No water. Hmm. No drink order.
That's the worst.
No acknowledgement. I see waiter after waiter walking by. And
what
I'm trying.
Are we covered in mud? What's happening?
Yeah. And it's not like we were around a corner. I mean, we were out. We were actually on the street. Like, there's outdoor seating.
Yeah.
So it's just one big kind of. I don't know what you call it, like a stable of maybe six tables. It's not even like 30. It's like there's like seven tables and we're one of them. And the waiter, and I keep trying to, I'm not being a dick about it, but after, 15 minutes, I'm like, well, maybe if I get their attention, but they avoid eye contact.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long it was, but eventually, and Stacy doesn't normally do this. She's like, let's just go. And I was like, oh, because I'm usually the impatient one. She's like, this is ridiculous. Let's just go. And so we stood up and left, and immediately in this other restaurant, as I'm having my drink and my water and my attention from, actually, it's funny, in the next restaurant, two waiters thought we were in their station. So we would have one waiter say, hey, can I take your drink order? We get the drink order. Another waiter come up, hey, what's your drink order? Like, well, actually, and then another person say, hey, can we get your food order? We get the food order. The person goes, hey, can we get your food order? Like, yeah, what's going on here? You should probably go down the street because they need some help.
They need help.
But anyway, I'm sitting there giving my Yelp review and I say 35 minutes. I think I might have said 45 and then I went back. I was like, that's probably exaggeration. I said, we were sitting there for 35 minutes and nothing happened. It was probably more like 20 minutes.
Sure.
So I lied.
But it felt like 35.
But it was a lie. I'm pretty sure it wasn't 35. It could have been 35, but I'm pretty sure.
15 minutes is too much.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
Without
anything?
Yeah. And it was, again, we're talking about it wasn't like a ginormous restaurant where
it's a socially distant restaurant.
Yeah, there were seven tables.
Come on.
And there were three waiters.
Come on.
There were three waiters, you know what I mean? And because I could, all three of them came outside.
Actually, something very similar happened to me a few weeks ago. I went to a restaurant that I really like, but I hadn't been there, obviously, for a long time. And we were sitting outside, me and this other person. And I was so excited to be there. But we didn't get any service for the longest time. And the weirdest thing is that the waiter had come out and talked to us early on. BS'd a whole bunch about this, that, and the other thing. And yet we didn't get anything after that. So, like, the other person had to go inside and be like, hey, we have not gotten anything, which is really awkward because then the same person comes out who we had interacted very positively with. But it's weird. It's like they kind of forgot about it or something.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, right? You don't, as a waiter, you don't realize, oh, this person, I didn't know that was my table. I thought it was so-and-so's table.
Yeah.
But usually in a restaurant, you have a lead person, because I've worked in restaurants before, that keeps track of those kinds of mistakes. Yeah. Like, I noticed that, that couple has been sitting there for a while. I don't see any menus on there. I don't see any water. I don't see utensils. They've been sitting there for a while. Someone needs to do something about that, you know? I don't know. Anyway, the point is like, why would I lie? Well, I was hurt. I felt discriminated against, and I was annoyed, and I was hangry. And I also felt kind of, maybe it's an age thing as well, because, you know, I'm 50 years old, and people hanging out in Ballard are not that old anymore. And I wonder if a part of me felt like I'm being thrown out with the garbage as an old person.
Although you don't look that old, you know.
But again, in my heart, this is maybe what's happening. And I wanted to hurt him back.
Yeah.
I 20 minutes doesn't sound that bad, but 35 minutes, that sounds pretty bad. Yeah. And honestly, it very well could have been 35 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Another lie that I told my students, and I know some of my students are listening, particularly one student I know is listening right now that I told this lie to. We were talking about graduation. We were talking about the ceremony. Mm. And I lied and I said, it's great. I like the graduation ceremony.
Oh, right.
In reality, I find the graduation ceremonies to be fairly boring.
Oh, interesting.
Now, right? I like seeing the graduates.
As do I, by the way.
I like seeing the graduates graduate.
Yeah, yeah.
But 99% of a commencement ceremony are random board members who I've never met giving a speech, and some boring person. Now, we did have Chris Novoselic give a speech one time at our graduation.
That's cool.
And I shook his hand.
You know, I didn't attend my UW graduation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you probably didn't miss much. I think I slightly napped through mine. But I love seeing the graduates, but a lot of it isn't really centered on the graduates. It's centered on these other randos, and it's really boring. But I didn't want my students to not go to the ceremony because it's actually kind of it's meaningful. It feels good to go there. So I lied and I said, I love the ceremony when I don't really like the ceremony.
That's fair.
Another lie that I was trying to think of like a big lie, like a really obvious lie that because these lies that I told you, they're not like huge.
Sure, sure.
And the one that popped in my mind was I was in Los Angeles and I went to the Magic Castle. Have you been?
No.
It's really fun.
It's
a huge mansion, like right off of the Sunset Strip, I think.
It's not the Hughes Mansion.
It's, I think it's not too far from there, but it's Magic Castle. It's this huge, like old looking, mansion-y looking house.
Not Hughes. What's the guy? There's that famous rich person's house down there in LA.
I don't know.
Anyways.
And there's all these different theaters in this mansion-y house, and there's magic. So I don't know how often, but there's like a restaurant and everything's real, like 19 or 1880s kind of looking, like a lot of red velvet. And it's just a really cool thing. And you need to say a secret word and you go through this secret door.
Ooh, like the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror kind of thing.
And you can't even get a reservation normally. Someone that's a member, like a magician, has to actually authorize you to go.
Oh my gosh.
So I met a magician and I asked, and I knew he was in LA, and I remember asking him, I was like, are you a member of Magic Castle? He's like, yeah. And I was like, can you endorse me to actually get me? And he's like, sure.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was the best. You know, there's all these little nooks and crannies in this building, and each room has different magicians doing like really amazing magic acts to like 14 people.
Wow.
And I'm in the front row and I'm watching this one magic guy. And he says, hey, you know, come up on stage. And I'm like, I got called up on stage in the Magic Castle like three times. It was,
oh, really?
It was weird. I just had one of those looks.
They saw you in half?
Yeah. They pull me up on stage and he's doing this card trick or some kind of thing with his hands. And he's like, do you see this? And I'm trying to play along. I'm trying to play along. And then when the reveal happens, he holds up his hands to the audience, the backs of his hands to the mm-hmm. audience. But him and I can see the fronts of his hands, the inside. And he asks me a question. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember how the magic trick worked, but written on his finger was a number 2 or something like that.
Okay.
And so I could, he was like, so what's the answer? And he's pointing right at this big number 2 that only him and I can see.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I'm like, oh, I see how, in a split second, right. I'm like, I see how this magic trick works.
Right.
It's just, you're just hoping I'll go along with this.
Right.
What if I said 5?
Oh my God.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
So I lied to the entire audience, okay. And I said 2.
Okay, okay. I was thinking you lied and said, or, you know, you said 5.
Or I said, I have no idea, but you have a 2 written on your hand, because that would be the truth.
Oh my God.
But I didn't say that. I just said,
yeah.
I just played along, and I said 2, and the audience was wowed.
Oh my God.
And I sat back down, and people came up to me, and I said, I don't know how it worked, because I didn't
want... Oh my God.
Because I didn't want to...
That's such a big risk, though.
I didn't want to out him. Right. But... Why did this magic guy had never met me? He probably looked at me and thought he probably has a way of reading people a little bit.
You're
like,
gonna help me, aren't
like
you?
Like I probably had a big smile on my face or something.
He's so happy I didn't go up. Would I have done it though?
Would you have done it?
I mean, I'm a troll. You know, I'm a troll.
But imagine this is like half an hour into.
I would have helped them. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're. I mean, it would. It would completely
everything.
The audience would be bummed out.
Yeah.
The magician would be
so upset.
Would just have to walk off the stage.
And I'd never be invited to the castle again.
Yeah, there's so many demands on that situation. It's
along with it.
It's easier to lie.
Yep.
Yeah. So Berto, final word on our second episode about lying.
I enjoyed it very much.
Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please, truthfully, take care of yourself because
you deserve it.